ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Pink ball, white ball, red ball. I won't use the next word. Who really cares?
Travis Head going full Travis Head swagger on the question of pink ball cricket and its place in the Ashes. Head is the master of the care not attitude right now. But when it comes to the colour of the Kookaburra, Australia dominates with the pink ball. Probably because they play so much more than other nations as we edge towards the second test at the Gabba. How are both sides tailoring their team and tactics for the magenta matchup? We're going full strategy mode to tell you how this second test might be won. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Alex Malcolm from Crick Info is one of the sharpest analysts in the game. He's going to help us understand how each team might seek to approach a crucial pink ball test. Alex, Australia, so strong in this form of cricket. They've won 12 of 13 tests. And maybe a good place to start is asking why they're so strong when the ball is pink.
Mitchell Stark's a big part of that, I think. His record is unparalleled in pink ball cricket.
Stark bowling now. Bowled him! Rana plays all around it on the drive. And that is five for Mitchell Stark. Stark at his absolute destructive best.
Marries up a little bit with his white ball record, certainly his ODI record. His ability to swing that new ball under lights, it makes him a nightmare. You know, 81 wickets, I think, at 17 or something like that. So he's been a huge part of their success. And then I think just playing a lot of it, you know, it's one of those things that a lot of teams that come here only get one look at it. They don't do a lot of prep. They don't play tour matches, as we found with England this week. They've opted not to go and play the two-day game in Canberra. So not getting the reps at it, not understanding the rhythms of it, batting under lights. There are a number of players who find it difficult. Steve Smith is one of those. He only averages 37. He's only got one of his test centuries under lights. Well, in a pink ball game, I should say. He really struggles with it and has been quite vocal about that. So I think that's all part of it. It's such a rarity. It was introduced thinking it would be the future of test cricket, and it hasn't been. And my colleague Andrew McGlashan's written a really good piece that'll go up this week. You know, the 10 years of pink ball cricket since it first came in 2015-16, and yeah, it just hasn't really taken off, and therefore visiting teams have got a challenge. They play one game with it and they only have a short sort of lead into it, and yeah, it's a very specific challenge in Australia against an Australian attack that's very used to it.
The wrinkle is the one time they lost a pink ball test was in Brisbane, which is where this test will be played.
Three slips in the gully, the short leg. Shamar Joseph around the wicket trying to get this last wicket. He bowls now and he...
Bowled it!
He's won! They've won! Shamar Joseph has knocked the stump out of the ground. He's rushing around the field. This is a huge victory lap. Oh, one of the great moments in the history of West Indies cricket here at the Gabba.
I mean, do the conditions at the Gabba create a significantly different proposition from where we normally are, which is Adelaide?
It does change the game a little bit. The complaint from the Australian players about the Gabba is that the surface is quite hard, quite a bit harder than Adelaide. In Adelaide, Damien Hoff, the curator there, has got it down to a fine art with the drop-in pitches. He knows how much grass to leave on it, and therefore the ball remains in pretty good shape and it tends to stay good enough to bowl with throughout the day and the night. It plays relatively consistently along the three sessions of the day, as opposed to in Brisbane. What's been found is that because the surface doesn't have as much grass on it, well, certainly the three they've played pink ball games on, the pink ball can get really soft. There's something to do with the way they treat the leather to colour it pink, is that it just gets a lot softer than the red ball does. I mean, there is complaints about the red Kookaburra at times that can get a little bit soft too after 30, 35 overs, but the pink one gets even softer than that, turns into a bit of a marshmallow.
Yeah, probably just a slightly different wicket. I think the ball's probably... react a little bit differently on the wicket here compared to Adelaide.
And the game can become quite dull in those periods, and it happened in that Australia-West Indies game in January 2024. Interestingly enough, sort of the early part of the day, which is the early afternoon session, because of the overheads and the humidity in that time of year, batting was tricky during that period, but in the sort of 4:30 to 6:30 bracket, the temperature sort of dried out a little bit and the ball got soft. That's when batting became its easiest, and a really key partnership in from West Indies' point of view in that first innings in that game in 2024 was between Kevin Hodge and Joshua De Silva, and that sort of set him up to make a 300-plus total.
Cummins full again to Hodge. He's on the drive. It's a good shot as well. It's beating Travis Head at mid-off, and it'll go all the way for four. Well, that's a fine stroke. And he held the pose as well, Hodge.
Which set the game up for West Indies, and then Shamar Joseph did all the damage and on the fourth day to win the game. So, yeah, the ball can get soft. It's not that easy to score, but it's hard to get out because there's not a lot of zip, not a lot of sideways, not a huge amount of spin, but Nathan Lyon has played a key role in those periods to hold up an end and allow the quicks to rest, and then they come back under lights when the ball tends to swing and move a little bit more, or they wait until that second new ball comes.
There's a lot talked about lights and when it does things and what it doesn't and doesn't do, and again, you just got to play the game in front of you. So some wickets are greener, some flatten out, some crack, some spin.
Yeah, that's kind of the reason. I mean, there's been some decent scores up at the Gabba. Australia made 400-plus in against Pakistan nearly 9 years ago, and Pakistan made 450 chasing 490 in the fourth innings there. But then there's also been some lower-scoring games. The game against Sri Lanka in 2018-19, and then the one against the West Indies was a little bit lower-scoring, certainly in the third and fourth innings. And we saw in the Shield game between Queensland and Victoria only last week, that big scores in the first two innings. Victoria made 300-plus first innings. Queensland made 400-plus with Renshaw making 100. And then the game moved quickly in the third and fourth innings with the ball nipping with the thunderstorms around. So, yeah, it's slightly different the way it plays in Queensland compared to in Adelaide.
With all the context and history sort of accounted for, let's think about how the teams might use their talent to try and win. Who would you expect to play for Australia, and how are they going to use that 11?
I think it'll be unchanged. All indications are that nothing's going to change. And I know there's been a lot of public talk about the want to move Travis Head to the top, but it needs to be remembered that Head made a runnable 140 in the pink ball game in Adelaide last year. And part of the reason he was so successful in that game was he didn't have to bat on the first night.
Ashwin into Travis Head on 99 forward, calling for a quick single to the next side. He's three for the 100. Travis Head standing tall. 100 not out. And he's rocking his bat like a baby, welcoming his second child. And Adelaide Oval gets to their feet to applaud one of their own.
If you recall, Australia bowled India out quite cheaply on the opening day. Mitchell Starc was the star. And then Australia had to bat under lights against Bumrah in Adelaide. And it was a really tough period of batting. And Nathan McSweeney and Manus Labuschagne got Australia through. McSweeney made a really important 30-odd. Labuschagne made 60-odd. And then Head was able to come out in the brightness of the day when the wicket was quite flat on day two. And he carved India up.
Ashwin on leg stump, slot sweep from Head. That is gone a fair way back. Catching practice for the patrons in the crowd. And Travis Head, for the second time today, has taken Ashwin out of the ground.
So exposing him under lights, if the same scenario happened, for example, if Australia bowled England out cheaply like they did in the first innings in Perth, and then they had to face a tricky period under lights, they don't really want their key match winner with the bat coming out to face Archer and co when the ball's zipping around and it's a bit of a lottery. They want in batting during the best times of the day when the ball's a little bit softer and there's not as much nip and swing. So I think that's part of the reason why they'll go unchanged. They trust Khawaja. He's got a lot of experience. He's played three pink ball games at the Gabba. He actually got 75 in that game against West Indies a couple of years ago, which was really important in the context of that game. So they'll trust him and back him again, although he's obviously under a bit of pressure and still working his way back from the back spasm last week. And then I think Nathan Lyon will play for the reasons we explained a little bit earlier on this chat, that he bowled 50 overs against West Indies in that pink ball game in 2024 in January. Just those flat periods during the afternoon, evening session before the sun sets. He's so important to hold up an end and bowl tightly. And you just never know if England settle in, if a couple of their batters are able to book in and find a way to get started and get away, then Lyon becomes an important asset in that scenario. And he's also a good matchup for Pope and Stokes in particular in that top six for England. So I think that's the way they'll go. And then as far as England are concerned, Mark Wood's not going to play. That's already been confirmed. And they are talking quite heavily about playing a spinner for the exact reason Australia are going to play a spinner, just because of those flat periods. Will Jacks, which would extend their batting down to number eight. And his off spin's better than part-time. So, again, that gives them options, gives them a little bit more depth with the bat, but also an opportunity to hold up an end and allow the quicks to rotate at the other end rather than burn them. And we saw in Perth, they're not as good backing up day after day as the Australian quicks are. So that's something that England have to be mindful of. But I think that's looking like the way both teams will go, unless the surface throws up something really unusual one day out, if they think it's going to be very, very spicy and seam or fast bowlers are going to dominate the game, then that might change thinking for both sides. But at the moment, I think they're going to look at history and go, OK, we need a spinner in both lineups.
England's been steadfast. They won't go away from their Bazball blueprint. It's chaotic. Pink ball cricket can be a little bit chaotic. It feels like it could be chaos squared. How do you think that that's going to marry up those two things?
Yeah, that's not a bad way of putting it. Yeah, the game could go at warp speed times two. It went at warp speed in Perth. And again, it could move really, really quickly. I doubt there'll be dull periods. England just don't allow for dull periods. Mind you, they have talked about it a little bit with their Bazball 2.0 or Bazball with brains or whatever you want to call it. They did it a little bit in the northern summer just gone against India. There was a game at Lord's where they batted in a different tempo, slowed the game down to take time out of the game, and batted because the conditions meant that that was the way that they needed to go to try and win that game. So they are capable of doing it, particularly a player like Joe Root can do that. It's just a question of whether, and Ben Stokes is another too.
At different phases of the day, you can feel quite placid and you can feel quite out of the game with the ball, and then very quickly things can turn around. Similarly with the bat, recognising those moments and utilising them best you can. You know, when to maybe put your foot down and maximise the good batting conditions, and similarly being able to manage it when it changes and how quickly it changes, I think.
It's just a question of whether the top three plus Brook can adjust to the tempo of the game and whether they can identify a period in that afternoon, early evening session where batting's at its best and they don't have to really push the rate. They can just settle in and grind Australia if the opportunity presents itself. It'll be interesting to see whether they do that or whether they double down. I suspect they'll double down and just go, you know what, our best method is to try and hit Australia off their length, which they tried to do in Perth and it didn't work. The Gabba will present similar conditions, probably slightly better maybe for batting at times than Perth was. But again, there'll be extra bounce there. There'll be a little bit of sideways, and it'll be a risk to try and hit the likes of Stark and Boland and Doggett off 6, 7, 8 metre length.
Feels like it's going to be wild. Feels like it's going to be chaotic. Feels like it's going to be fun. Alex Malcolm, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure, Patrick.
Headlines. Rory McIlroy is headlining the Australian Open at Melbourne's famous course, Kingston Heath, but today it was Aussie luminaries like Adam Scott and Cam Smith speaking to the press. Both were asked about the event returning to a male-only competition after the experimentation with playing men's and women's concurrently. Here was Scott's response.
I think it probably is more appealing, certainly, for international players to come down to play. Obviously, Rory is on board and here, coming off the back of an incredible year, so that's great timing for the event. You have to give Golf Australia credit for doing what they can with the event and doing something different. But also I give them credit for pivoting and making this big move and making a huge effort to get one of the greatest players of this generation, if not the greatest.
The tournament starts Thursday. The West's Tigers are again courting instability off the field. The club's major shareholder, the Holman Barnes Group, has removed four independent directors from the board, including chairman and former New South Wales Premier Barry O'Farrell. Holman Barnes Group owns 90% of the club and claims to have been left out of the loop on commercial announcements and also the colour scheme of the 2025 home jersey. Too orange, they reckon. O'Farrell reacted to the news on ABC Sydney.
And for reasons that I suspect relate to antics within the Holman Barnes Group, and the desire for people to get to the top there, we've had yet another what I've unkindly called a brain fart affecting the club.
Meanwhile, the Perth Bears have announced their first signings: discarded Canterbury halfback Toby Sexton and English international Harry Newman, who is a centre. Not huge headline makers, but solid acquisitions for the new NRL franchise. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.